Dr. Susan Lipkins has been a psychologist for more than 25 years. She's an expert on hazing and author of the book Preventing Hazing: How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. Thank you so much for talking to us, Susan.
Thanks for having me.
So, what is the definition of hazing?
My definition is that it is a process based on a tradition used by groups to maintain a pecking order or hierarchy or to discipline.
What kinds of groups?
We see it prevalent on all kinds of sports teams, both male and female. But I've seen it in leadership camps, in drama. 24% of the students in church groups have been hazed.
Groups inherently have a hierarchy. Is this a way to maintain, these are the subordinates, these are the upperclassmen, you need to have some sort of rituals or tradition to maintain some sort of order?
No, I don't believe so, and not all groups do. So, like, for example, a rock and roll band, they usually don't have a hierarchy. So it really depends on the kind of group, the structure of the group, the tradition of the group, sometimes the way the adults have set up the group or continue to set up that group. And it's an issue, basically, of are we all equal here, and do we all have equal rights and equal respect, or is there a differentiation?
After this happened, there was a headline, "Ugly hazing has occurred." And I was curious, can hazing be anything but ugly?
There is certainly what I call mild hazing. So, for example, if you have to sort M&Ms by color, that's a mild hazing. But if you're being paddled or eggs are being thrown at you or you're being put in a dangerous situation, that's no longer mild hazing. And hazing goes from mild to moderate to severe, and sometimes it ends in death.
Why do kids do it?
First, it's a tradition. Just like a birthday party and you blow out candles, you just do it, you learn how to do it, and you keep doing it. But the process, which I call the blueprint of hazing, is that people come in and they're what I call victims or targets. They get hazed. The next year, they watch as others get hazed, and they're bystanders. The following year, they now have senior status in the group, and they believe it's their right and duty to pass on their tradition. The problem is that when they repeat it, they want to add their own mark. So they typically increase the violence or the humiliation or the sexuality. So if they do it even a little bit, let's say, one more shot of alcohol or two more paddles or whatever, over 10 years, now it's a lot more.
There's been kind of two types of reaction from parents and folks that I've talked to. One is the outrage. I can't believe this is happening. But then there's other folks that kind of look at it as, oh, it's just kids being kids. And it's not even being called hazing. It's actually something called froshing. Froshing has been around. It's just tradition.
What happens is most communities actually do split. Usually there's a larger percentage of people who support the perpetrators and a smaller proportion support the victims or the kids who've been hazed. And the people who feel as if, you know, look, this is part of our tradition, like it's not hazing, this is our culture. And that's exactly what the problem is.
So what advice do you have for parents?
The first thing that parents should do at any age, and even starting as young as 4, is to teach them that nobody has a right to touch them in a way that makes them uncomfortable. And that kids who grow up with that are a little bit more aware so that they're not going to let themselves get paddled or hurt or touched, you know, in inappropriate ways all through their lives. The second thing is to report, that it is important for the kids to have some trusted adult, hopefully the parent, but anybody, that they can report things to that make them feel uncomfortable or that they know are wrong.
Are there instances when hazing has been stopped?
I've interviewed kids, and they'll compare and contrast why hazing goes on in soccer but doesn't go on in wrestling, and it has to do with the coach. The coach has a tremendous amount of responsibility and power, and when there's a coach that says, not here, not now, not on my team, you're going to be off, you know, and we'll lose the season, and I'm not losing my job because of this, there's no hazing. And the other ones who, like, look away, you know, wink, wink, say, I know this has been going on, they don't actually say anything, the hazing continues and gets worse. So, you know, if you're really going to fight hazing, if you're really going to change the culture of the school and the town, if you're going to teach equality and respect, then it takes, you know, takes a village, it takes a lot of effort, it takes a lot of time and talking. You know, I think it will happen, you know, one one town at a time, one person at a time. But if we don't start, it's just going to get worse.
Susan Lipkins is a psychologist and an expert on hazing. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you.
I'm Florangela Davila, KPLU News.